The Debate.
It's news that is a bombshell. The sitting U.S. president pressing the secretary of one of the states in the U.S. to look for votes on overturned presidential election results. Such is the case when it comes to U.S. President Donald Trump and the Georgia Secretary of State. Is this enough grounds for an impeachment? The re-elected U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi thinks so. In this edition of the debate, we will look at the Trump antics and his push to reverse the U.S. presidential election in order to stay in power in the name of voter fraud. First, let's go to Chicago and talk to a correspondent, Ramin Mazari, who joins us. Well, Ramin, this piece of news has certainly made a lot of noise. Tell us, in a nutshell, what went down.
Well, I think above all, the call shows what a political crisis the United States is still in and how a Biden victory is still not certain. Anyone who thought there would be a sort of Christmas miracle and that the recent holiday week had changed things, it's already proven to be wishful thinking on the first day back to work for so many here. It's really quite a start to what will be the most important week in this country since Election Day. This week is really going to be full of chaos, protests, and unpredictable events. Tomorrow, the fate of the Senate will be decided in two runoffs in Georgia, and polls are still too close to call. And then on Wednesday, the president will be decided by the Electoral College. This vote will certainly be disputed, but it certainly seems very, very likely that Joe Biden will be elected president on Wednesday. But who really knows? This hour-long phone call, it's been called an insight into Trump's unprincipled bully businessman personality. But it's also showing how national-level politics in the U.S. is agreed upon by elites and not by the laws or really the people. You know, beyond the usual Trump psychology angle, the call is a genuine reminder of how very disputed this election is and probably always will be. In the call, Trump claimed Georgia officials have covered up acts of vote fraud, which cost him hundreds of thousands of votes. And polls show that, consistently show that 40% of the country agrees with Trump, and they believe that Biden's victory is illegitimate due to vote fraud. So it's not as if Trump is some sort of outlier making, unheard of accusations. I mean, this is all over the country and has been, ever since November 3rd. Nobody really knows who leaked the call, but of course the U.S. military establishment monitors the U.S. worse than the KGB or the Stasi ever could. So many believe it was, leaked by them to the Washington Post. And the U.S. military has been increasingly vocal and open about respecting the current vote totals and that Trump did not win. And that really reminds us of how powerful the U.S. military here is in this country. And they are flexing their muscles. And this may be, the latest act. It's also important to remember that this comes in the context of complete economic catastrophe for Main Street, total cultural division, and the still raging pandemic. So we basically had a week off for Christmas and the New Year's holiday, but this call really pulls us back into the maelstrom, which is America in 2020 and now 2021.
Thank you very much for that. Ramin Mazari there, a correspondent talking to us from Chicago. Let me bring in author, investigative journalist, and founder of DCReport.org, David K. Johnson, who joins us from Rochester, New York. David K. Johnson, welcome. What has happened exactly? Tell us what this U.S. President Donald Trump has done in this phone call with the Georgia Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, or Perger.
Well, let's begin with Donald Trump lost the election, lost it overwhelmingly. There is zero involvement by the U.S. military in this, and it's offensive that your correspondent just said that. In fact, it's been very clear that the U.S. military has no role in this, and the phone call was pretty clearly leaked by Georgia officials who taped it for their own protection. Now, in this hour-long phone call, people get to see that Donald Trump, I've known for more than almost a third of a century now, he is committing crimes in making this phone call. It is a offense under both Georgia law and United States federal law to seek to change the results of an election through improper conduct. And a number of law professors, former prosecutors, I'm a law lecturer, I'm not a lawyer, have all pointed out that this thing is plenty of grounds here for criminal indictment of Donald Trump by the state of Georgia, by the federal government, and by impeachment, though, given that there's only 2 weeks to go, Donald Trump is not going to be impeached again. Donald Trump is a man who has never been accountable for anything wrong he's done in his life. He spent his entire life as a con man, lying, cheating, stealing, and tricking people. And that many people believe there was election fraud when Republican election officials that control the election process in many states are saying that's nonsense, and they continue to believe it, is an indication of how gullible people can be. That's how con artists operate. They depend on the gullibility of people who wish things to be true, but that aren't. That's what children are.
Okay, let me bring in now a conservative political commentator and national political correspondent at the Tennessee Star, Neil McCabe, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Neil McCabe, welcome. Let me find out, first of all, your account of what has transpired in this leak, which, well, you heard what David K. Johnston said there, and what many have described, which I will get into, but first, your take on it.
Well, first of all, if this was not actually a formal or official settlement conference, it was, for all intents and purposes, held as a settlement conference. And this is an opportunity where two parties in a dispute can get together and hash things out. Typically, these conferences are off the record. Certainly, they're not admissible in court. And certainly, it's a violation of professional ethics for attorneys, including the attorney who is the Secretary of State of Georgia, to record such a meeting. And certainly it's beyond any kind of legal ethics to release a tape of an improperly recorded meeting. In this meeting, the president and his team were making a case, a forceful case, for what they see as election irregularities. And in these sort of settings, people speak freely. That is the point. You want both parties in a room speaking freely with the confidence that everything that they say will be kept in the room. And then when the conference is over, the goal of this sort of meeting is to avoid a lawsuit, to not go to court. This is what happened. The Secretary of State acted in terrible bad faith, since he was the only one in his team. They knew there was a recording, and they knew the recording would be released, and so they were able to sort of temper their interactions with the president and the president's team, and maybe even debate him, knowing that they had this trick up their sleeve.
Well, wait a minute. So you're zooming in on that aspect of it, which I'm guessing you do have a point there. I'm not too familiar with the law, but obviously when you're recording somebody, especially of that stature, you have to inform that person. But the way that this news is being reported, it's being reported as if this is the U.S. president soliciting election fraud by asking the Georgia Secretary of State to find 11,780 votes, and then threatening him if he did not find those votes.
It's ridiculous on it. Any high school student will tell you that the President of the United States has no authority to tell the Secretary of State of Georgia to do anything. He is acting as a
private citizen. But he was on tape.
He was running for president as a citizen, and he has the right to advocate for his position. He has the right to make his case to the Secretary of State. He has no pressure. The president wasn't threatening to arrest anyone. He didn't say he was sending in the 82nd Airborne. This was a settlement conference that was supposed to be off the record, and he was making his case. The president is aggrieved. He has serious concerns. There are millions of Americans who have the same questions about what happened in Georgia, and he was making that case in what he thought was a private meeting.
Okay. David K. Johnston, go ahead.
Well, your other guest clearly does not know the law or understand the law. There was no violation of any law in recording that call by the Georgia officials. And furthermore, any suggestion of legal privilege was completely vitiated by having Mark Meadows and other parties on the call. But there's no legal matter here that would provide any privilege of any kind. And statements that Donald Trump made on that tape clearly constitute the commission of crimes. Now, whether they'll be charged as crimes or not is an entirely separate matter. We should,
sure.
Your listeners and viewers should, wait till I'm done and then you can complain.
Go ahead.
We have recounted the votes in Georgia several times. Republicans are in charge of the vote counting. The Trump campaign has not established a single case anywhere in the country, certainly none that would be big enough to overturn an election, of any kind of vote fraud. This is pure con man nonsense by Donald. And the caller, clearly he cites high school. I suggest the caller should go to college, take some law courses, and learn what the law actually is, because he's totally misinformed here. And I don't want your readers to be, your viewers to be misinformed. Nothing improper went on here except for Donald Trump's threats. And clearly your other guest does not understand the nature of what a threat is under the law and why it is illegal what Donald Trump did.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, obviously, okay, go ahead. What I said was it was a violation of ethics. I didn't say it was a violation of law. And that's such a ridiculous dodge to tell me whether something's illegal or not illegal. The Holocaust was legal, sir. The Gestapo was enforcing the law. It doesn't mean that it was correct. I don't think you would tell any of your students that it was ethical to secretly record a meeting that everyone assumed was private, nor to release
sure
it to
I
the
would.
Press.
Sure,
oh,
I
sure.
would.
Perfectly you would tell your students to secretly record the President of the United States.
As both a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and as a law lecturer and someone who knows this area of the law deeply, under Georgia law, there was nothing improper, and there's no reason for the Georgia officials not to release that tape. There is no ethical issue here, except in the minds of people who are Trump sycophants.
Well, I'm curious as to why Neil McCabe, again, I'm just curious as to why you're zooming in on this aspect of it in terms of the it being ethical for the Georgia Secretary of State not to have informed Trump instead of what is being reported. You see, you have all this news that's splashed all over the place now regarding the fact that they are saying that, you have the Democrats to say impeachment is in order again. You have a call that's made now, was made to the FBI, who declined to look into the matter, but did acknowledge that Trump could face a criminal investigation and has now said that the Fulton County District Attorney should look into it. So you have the way that this is being presented. Now, what I'm asking you is, what can you come out in defense for Trump to say no,
he didn't do what
they're claiming that was obviously the law to have been broken?
Well, the President of the United States did not threaten to kill anyone or arrest anybody. He didn't threaten to send in the 82nd Airborne. He didn't threaten to abuse his presidential powers. He was making an argument in what he thought was a closed-door private meeting. And so he was advocating his case. Now, it was a political, if he said there would be retribution, or if he said that there would be a price to be paid, obviously he was speaking in a political context about an elected official in Georgia. The President of the United States cannot order the Secretary of State to do anything. He was there very much as a private citizen, and he's aggrieved. And if you were in the situation that the president was in, and you knew that there were thousands of ballots in Georgia counted as mail-in ballots that were never even folded, you would have questions. And so
what did he mean when he told them to go look for the votes? Where was he supposed to go look for the votes?
Well, how about the votes of mail-in ballots where the ballots were never folded and never went into envelopes?
Okay.
That's a place to start. How about those boxes that people put out all over the state of Georgia, where people were just dumping mail-in ballots into these boxes that people were just leaving out in the street.
Uh-huh.
There was tremendous.
We unfortunately are looking at just a few minutes left to this debate. So I didn't even move past the second question, not maybe even the first one. So David K. Johnson, I got to move on to what's happening on Wednesday, the Congress's electoral vote count. Tell us exactly what this is about, and tell us what many are under the impression that this could prevent Biden from being elected, if that's the case.
It will not prevent Biden from assuming office. This is a ministerial act by Congress. There is no substance to this whatsoever. the handful of Republican who said they are going to oppose this are now being attacked by principled Republicans who believe in the rule of law and have not sold their souls to the Donald Trump cult. This is complete nonsense being done by Donald Trump. And just keep in mind, Donald Trump is the third generation head of a white-collar crime family. He spent his entire life not making money through the competitive market, but extracting money by not paying people, by not paying taxes, by cheating. All of this is thoroughly documented. I have thousands and thousands of pages documenting this stuff. It's in my books about Donald Trump. And nothing is happening except that on the 20th of January at noon, Donald Trump will no longer be president of the United States. Thank God.
Neil McCabe, obviously these are divisions that are existence in the American society. We're looking at both you and our guest there in Rochester, who have obviously, to say the least, difference of opinions when it comes to Donald Trump. Where is the U.S. headed after January 20th if Joe Biden, the president-elect, comes into office? What's going to happen?
Well, Joe Biden is going to have a really rough time. We saw that Nancy Pelosi had to fly in somebody suffering from COVID just to make sure that she squeaked by in her election for speaker. If the Republicans at any point in the House flip six or seven moderate Democrats, Nancy Pelosi literally loses control of the lower chamber. We're going to see if the Republicans hold on to the Senate. But even if they don't hold on to the Senate, those are very, very tight margins in both chambers. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden is going to have a very difficult time. And he's not the energetic guy. He's not the actively moving and understanding guy that we even saw 4 years ago. Joe Biden is going to have a very difficult time.
Okay.
Because of his own limitations and the limitations on Capitol Hill.
In a minute, David K. Johnston, we have heard Donald Trump saying that he's going to come back after 4 years. You have, 70-plus Americans who voted for Donald Trump. If you have Trump, who says he's going to come back, have a loudspeaker for the duration of these 4 years, this could really create schisms inside the American society. Do you agree?
Yes. I think that Donald is going to spend the next 4 years trying to act as a government in exile. He's going to continue to spread the ridiculous nonsense he's done. And of course, it's a very low energy job for him. Remember, he said as a candidate he would never leave the White House and never play golf, played more golf than any president by far in history, disappears for days at a time, because those of us who know Donald personally know that he is a very lazy man. He is not a high level worker. He's just good at fooling people into thinking that. But we're going to see a continuing effort by anti-democratic forces, people who do not believe in the American Constitution, including, clearly from his remarks, your guest, and who do not understand the law, trying to keep the autocratic nature of Donald Trump around, or to find someone younger and more vigorous. And I think that's a real threat to the liberties of the people of the United States and to the rule of law.
Thank you very much. Let me thank first our correspondent at the top of the debate, Rami Mazari. Also, Neil McCabe, national political correspondent at Tennessee Star. Thank you, Neil. And also author, investigative journalist, and founder of DCReport.org, David K. Johnston from Rochester. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Ikova Tafoe, it's goodbye until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds. that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. That is so he may make what Satan throws in a trial for those within whose hearts is disease and those hard of heart. And indeed, the wrongdoers are in extreme dissension.
Dear brothers and sisters, we're now going to discuss the 53rd verse of Surah Al-Hajj. لِيَجْعَلَ مَا يُلْقِي الشَّيْطَانُ فِتْنَةً لِلَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٌ وَالْقَاسِيَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ وَإِنَّ الظَّالِمِينَ لَفِي شِقَاقٍ بَعِيدٍ. So that he may make what the Satan casts a trial for those in whose hearts is disease, and those whose hearts are hard. And verily, the unjust are in deep opposition. So, Satan's temptations are as a means for testing the hard-hearted and sick-hearted people, the spiritual sickness, and somehow being hard-hearted. These are usually some suitable grounds for falling into the snare of seditions and temptations of Satan. The satanic plots of the opponents are always used for the examination of both the aware believers and the obstinate disbelievers. And this is why the Holy Quran says, لِيَجْعَلَ مَا يُلْقِي الشَّيْطَانِ فِتْنَةً, so that he may make what the Satan casts a trial. But for whom? لِلَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٌ وَالْقَاسِيَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ. For those in whose hearts is disease, وَالْقَاسِيَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ, and those whose hearts are hard. So it is really noteworthy and interesting that those in whose hearts is disease, الَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٌ, is somehow consisting الْقَاسِيَةِ قُلُوبُهُمْ, those whose hearts are hard. And although being hard-heartedness is a kind of sickness, is a kind of somehow a spiritual sickness, but it has been mentioned specifically and particularly in the verse so as to emphasize the importance of this sickness in being from among the oppressors. The castings of the Satan, the satanic plots, are only fitna. They are somehow as a trial, and it is really working for those who have the main grounds, the grounds and the best kinds of lands that the fitna and the castings of the Satan grow are the grounds and the hearts of those people whose hearts are really spiritually sick.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Then the Quran implies that the cruel oppressors have abided in a serious hostility and opposition while they are far from reality and the truth. The verse continues saying, وَإِنَّ الظَّالِمِينَ لَفِي شِقَاقٍ بَعِيدٍ. Verily, the unjust are in deep opposition. So there is some kind of a sequence observed in this important verse, dear listeners. The main root and the main cause of being the subject of the fitna and the trials of satanic plots is that you are actually hard-hearted and you have a kind of spiritual sickness inside of you. Then you become from among the unjust people, and then you become from among the oppositions. So this proves why this sickness, this spiritual sickness, has been mentioned particularly and specifically inside this 53rd verse. So the previous verse told us that the Almighty Allah is all-knowing, is the all-wise, and of course He will cancel anything that Satan throws in. فَيَنْسَخُ اللَّهُ مَا يُلْقِي الشَّيْطَانِ. But these throwings of the Satan, these castings of the Satans, are here only for the trial of both the good people and the unjust. But there are some believers with whom Satan can contact, but they immediately understand and they banish him. But there are some others that Satan will be always staying with. And this is the outcome of what happens. إِنَّ الظَّالِمِينَ لَفِي شِقَاقٍ بَعِيدٍ. The unjust verily are in deep opposition. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
Don't be saddened by what you see, all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry, in your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Around the world with reporters.
A ceremony attended by Syrians, Palestinians, Iranians, and Yemenis was held in Damascus to mark the first martyrdom anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's ambassador to Syria asserted that the resistance front will continue to fight back against any aggression, reiterating the assassination was a sign of the weakness of the United States.
By firing the missile on General Soleimani, the U.S. targeted the Iranian people, their power, and pride. The U.S. wanted to thwart the resistance front's plans, but they failed. They have no choice but to leave the region.
Delegates from Syria's Ba'ath Arab Socialist Party and Yemen also delivered words on General Soleimani and his achievements in leading resistance fighters against the Western plots in the region. Vice Secretary General of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine said General Soleimani told him the only path to liberate Palestine was armed struggle and national unity between Palestinians.
General Soleimani urged us to depend on ourselves instead of others. Thanks to his efforts and advices, today we make weapons and the Palestinian resistance is currently in constant development.
Photos of General Soleimani were also exhibited, showing moments of his missions across Syria and Iraq. For years, General Soleimani led Iranian military advisors in Syria at Syria's request and played a key role in defeating Daesh terrorists as well as restoring security to hundreds of square kilometers across the Arab country. For over a week, Syrians, Iranians, and Palestinians have commemorated General Soleimani's martyrdom. And as observers say, contrary to the U.S. and its regional allies' will, General Soleimani's assassination has further strengthened unity among all members of the resistance front. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
A compact group of demonstrators took the street again in Paris to protest against police violence, and in particular against the impunity of police officers who used the very controversial method of knee-to-neck choke with fatal consequences. 1 year ago, Cédric Chouviat died after 22 seconds of knee-to-neck choke that caused him fatal wounds. He died in a hospital 2 days later. 4 police officers were directly involved and indicted for involuntary homicide. The family of the victim asked for their suspension.
We have asked the Interior Minister to suspend the 4 police officers involved in the death and the murder of my father. We have been waiting for their suspension for 1 year now. There is no progress at all. We are waiting for a reaction, a real one.
Assa Traoré is the sister of Adama Traoré, murdered also by the knee-on-neck choke, the same method that killed George Floyd. That led to a worldwide protest asking the ban on such dangerous techniques.
That technique of immobilization used by police forces must be forbidden. That technique is fatal. We have denounced that method for 4 years now because Adam Traoré died exactly the same way as Cédric Chouviat, with a knee on his neck. Both said their last words, "I can't breathe." If French authorities had listened to us, Cédric Chouviat would not have died.
This protest is not only against police violence, but also against the global security law that would facilitate police violence, or at least would make it more difficult to film police violence. It's thanks to video footage that the beating of a music producer in Paris by police officers last November was made public.
Abnormal things are happening in this country from the police side. The government is obliged to react because there is an important mobilization, especially from the youth, against the global security law. It's important to withdraw that law.
The march ended under the Eiffel Tower, the place where Cédric Chauviat was choked to death. Cédric Chauviat died with a knee on neck choke. As long as this method will not be forbidden by the French government, the impunity of police officers will continue. Chris Den Hont, Paris.
On the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iranian commander General Qasem Soleimani and his companions, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip came together to thank the general for his support in their struggle against the Israeli aggression.
The assassination of General Soleimani has not stopped Iran's support for the Palestinian cause. Our resistance will continue until the liberation of Al-Quds. The blood of General Soleimani will not go in vain. General Soleimani made a turning point in the history of the Palestinian cause.
Many Palestinian leaders and officials joined the mourners and expressed gratitude to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. airstrike in Baghdad on January. Palestinians consider General Soleimani a symbol of resistance for all the oppressed Palestinians.
We stress that the resistance will continue till all Zionist plots are thwarted in the region. The path of General Soleimani will continue. His assassination has made us more determined to keep the resistance alive.
Palestinians stress that they will follow in the footsteps of General Soleimani, who had a major role in supporting the Palestinian resistance in different fields and making a big difference in the balance of deterrence and rules with the Zionist regime.
General Soleimani was assassinated because he was supporting the resistance front. He always cared about Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and Palestinians. His assassination has made us more united in our fight against the occupation.
Similar gatherings were held in other parts of the region to commemorate the Iranian top commander.
Palestinians here consider General Soleimani a symbol of resistance. They say they will continue his path of struggling against the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Palestine and Jerusalem Al-Quds. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
New crimes are added to the Saudi-led coalition's record violations of international law following the death of 22 Yemeni prisoners and the coalition's prisons in 2020, all due to torture and medical neglect.
Torture has become a regular thing for the Saudi coalition, and unfortunately, these crimes are being frequent and vary from year to year. This year, 22 prisoners were killed either under torture or medical and food neglect. So we believe that there is an intention to get rid of the prisoners.
The head of Yemen's National Committee for Prisoners Affairs confirms that the UAE keeps hundreds of prisoners in its presence in southern Yemen, despite its refusal to attend any negotiations, while the United Nations has promised to attend amid the humanitarian nature of the prisoners' issue.
The Emiratis are an essential part of this aggression, and they are on the ground and they have dozens of prisons in the lands they occupied here and in the Horn of Africa. We have asked the United Nations to bring the Emiratis for negotiations, but so far there is no response from them and we are still waiting.
2020 witnessed remarkable progress in the liberation of 1,087 prisoners of the Yemeni army and the popular committees, 670 of whom were freed through UN mediation and the rest through local exchange deals.
The Saudi coalition's violations of international humanitarian laws are not only against the prisoners, but against the entire people of Yemen, who are the victims of an ongoing war on their country. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Tehran University has held a ceremony to mark the anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani.
Iran's Minister of Science and Technology, who was attending the ceremony, said that universities and academic centers have great capacities to keep the path of Qasem Soleimani alive by studying different aspects of his personality and beliefs.
General Qasem Soleimani was a great person. His personality had different aspects. I believe that academic centers should study his behaviors and personality. I think his lifestyle and beliefs serve as a good role model for all the youth of our country and the world. We have great capacities and potentials at universities and academic centers in this regard.
The event in Tehran came as people and officials attended a ceremony in the city of Kerman, the burial place of General Qasem Soleimani, to remember his lofty status 1 year after his martyrdom.
The martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani had a big impact on the minds of people, both because of his own personality and what happened after his martyrdom. Therefore, for a researcher and expert of social sciences, his martyrdom provides a wide range of topics to study.
General Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, and his trench mate Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis were assassinated along with their companions in a U.S. terror drone strike near Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. Meanwhile, in response, the IRGC targeted the U.S. airbase of Ain al-Assad in Anbar province in western Iraq to retaliate the U.S. assassination of top Iranian anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Moreover, according to Iranian officials, Tehran has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. for assassinating General Soleimani, and soon a court session will be held in Iran in this regard. Iranian officials believe that more than anything, the U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani has proved to the global public opinion that the U.S. administration is the leading sponsor of terrorism in the world. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
In gratitude for their sacrifices in confronting America, Israel, and their tools in the region, Yemenis held an event to commemorate the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in the presence of the Iranian ambassador and representatives of the Islamic resistance movement.
Today, we live on the martyrdom anniversary of the two leaders, Soleimani and al-Muhandis. Remember the positions of these two heroes to stand by the nation's causes. Haj Qasem Soleimani gave himself to Palestine and the resistance and was intransigent in front of the projects of the Zionist enemy through which it wants to break up the region.
The participants recalled the actions of the martyr Soleimani and how he terrified America and Israel, which thought by assassinating him to weaken the resistance forces, but contrary, it lit a fire that would not be extinguished until the liberation of Jerusalem al-Quds and the demise of global arrogance.
We commemorate the two great martyrs, Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi Muhandis, who strived for God's cause and are loyal to God and did what they were required to do. God gave them wisdom and strength. They were great people, and we should follow their path.
The martyr Soleimani was an icon in the face of the Zionist entity and its projects. He played a great role in supporting the Palestinian resistance movement and stood by the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces in its battles with Daesh in Iraq.
Once again, Yemenis have taken a resolve to continue the legacy of General Qasem Soleimani in the face of years of aggression against the impoverished nation by Saudi Arabia and some of its regional allies and their Western backers. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Crowds of people as well as officials have flocked to Sayyida Zainab Shrine near Damascus to pay tribute to Iranian top commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. In an address to the ceremony, Iran's ambassador to Syria said General Soleimani was a symbol assassinated by the U.S. to force Iranians to kneel, stressing that the resistance front will triumph and take revenge of Soleimani's blood.
The Iranian nation will never sit back against those who carried out the crime. Those behind the crime will be punished. Iran will continue supporting Syria and its army until the Syrian army's sovereignty is restored on all territories.
Other speakers underlined the effective role of martyr Soleimani in defeating Daesh terrorists in Syria and Iraq, and foiling Western plots across the region. representative of the Syrian army in the ceremony, praised General Soleimani as a brave and wise commander who won the trust of all resistance fighters.
We have gathered here today tribute to Martyr Soleimani. His sacrifices will not be forgotten. We will continue adhering to resistance as a sole option. We promise Martyr Soleimani that his memory will be our path.
The crime of assassinating General Soleimani amounts to international terrorism in its ugliest form. General Soleimani's assassination is a great loss to Iran, Syria, and the resistance front. But thousands of Soleimanis are yet to come.
Photos of General Soleimani were also showcased in and around Sayyida Zainab Shrine. General Soleimani, who was assassinated by the U.S. in January 2020 in Iraq, led Iranian military advisors in Syria for years across Syrian territories, mainly Aleppo, Damascus, and Deir ez-Zor. His command played a major role in restoring stability to hundreds of square kilometers in Syria. General Soleimani's significant achievements in Syria cannot be forgotten by the people here. Syrians have marked his first martyrdom anniversary by showing appreciation to his support and acknowledgement that security in so many areas in Syria wouldn't have been possible without his presence. Hamad Ali from Sayyida Zainab Shrine, Damascus Countryside.
People have gathered here in Kabul to pay respect to the bravery and the leading role of two significant figures against invading forces and foreign-backed terrorists, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and our national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud, were close friends and comrades in the region. Their sacrifices have not been fully highlighted yet, so we need to know them more than ever.
Given the fact that Afghanistan has been repeatedly invaded by some superpowers, mainly over the past two centuries, resistance is considered a familiar concept among the nation. Afghans have had some top resistance leaders like Ahmad Shah Massoud, a national hero who became the victim of a terrorist attack back in 2001. His characteristics are very much similar to that of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in the eyes of Afghans.
The U.S. expected to remove the name of Qasem Soleimani from the minds of resisting nations by assassinating him. But contrary to those expectations, he became a popular hero, not only for Iranians, but also for all resistance nations across the world, just like Massoud.
Afghans and Iranians share many commonalities in terms of history, culture, religion, and security. Many people here in Afghanistan believe that one of the major similarities between these two nations is their resisting spirit against the invaders. This event in Afghanistan marks the memories of two well-known resistance leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero Ahmad Shah Massoud. This comes as Afghans themselves are suffering from terrorism and are seeking to follow the path of these two heroes. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
A year has passed since millions of Iranians attended the funeral service of slain Iranian military figure General Soleimani. Now, on the first anniversary of his assassination by the U.S., his fellow citizens in Kerman have once again come to his burial place to pay respect to him. Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He was killed in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from U.S. President Donald Trump.
We strongly demand that the Islamic Republic take harsh revenge. This is the demand made by all Iranians who owe their security to the efforts of General Soleimani in the fight against the terrorists.
General Soleimani is well known as the nemesis of the terrorists in the region. He played a key role in dismantling Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017 and helped liberate major areas in Syria from the terror group. That's what makes everyone question the U.S.'s drive behind his assassination.
General Soleimani brought the U.S. to its knees in the region. The U.S. sought to trigger chaos in our region by creating Daesh, but General Soleimani helped unite the people of the region and foiled Washington's attempts by defeating Daesh.
Following Soleimani's assassination, massive crowds of people in Iraq took part in his funeral service
to pay respect to him. This was followed by million-strong processions in Iran, the last of which was held in his hometown before he was laid to rest.
Tehran regards General Soleimani as the architect of U.S.'s defeat in the region. His role in dislodging Daesh terrorists won him huge support and popularity, not only among Iranians, but among the people of Syria and Iraq, who say his assassination created a united front against the U.S. Yusuf Jalali, Kerman.
We're back in the eye of the storm. These were the words of Simon Stevens, the head of Britain's National Health Service, as more people are in hospital with COVID-19 now than at the peak of the first wave earlier this year. Authorities are blaming the soaring infection rates on a new, more transmissible variant of the virus, first identified in Southeast England. Dr. Katie Sanderson of the Doctors Association has warned that the strain on hospitals is only going to get worse.
The volume of sick patients coming in with coronavirus is verging on unmanageable just in terms of ambulance capacity, A&E capacity and bed capacity. We haven't seen the patients who had coronavirus infections that they've contracted over Christmas yet because they're probably not sick enough to come to hospital yet.
Ambulances with infected patients have been forced to wait outside hospitals as capacity is overstretched. Many more infected individuals are forced to wait at home as ambulances are unable to meet the demands on the system.
This is something that we've just never experienced before. Control room staff are having to make incredibly difficult decisions to decide who gets an ambulance and in what order, quite often with huge numbers of people waiting for ambulances and they have nobody left to send.
A growing number of National Health Service staff are also off work because they are self-isolating or have become sick with the virus. Officials are now considering tightening coronavirus restrictions, with some suggesting a total nationwide lockdown to halt the spread of the new strain. Britain has recorded more than 71,000 confirmed coronavirus deaths, although some question the accuracy of the numbers when compared to mortality rates from previous years before the pandemic. According to the Office of National Statistics, the spike in fatalities for this year remains significantly higher than the government's official record of COVID fatalities.
This is The Teacher. A radio documentary on the life of prominent martyrs of Islam.
Inshallah, خدای متعال ایشون اجر بده و تفضل کنه و زندگی ایشون رو با سعادت.
I hope that Allah the Exalted will reward and bless him, that he will help him live a blissful life, and that he will make his end.
عزیزان مشتاق تا کسی شهید نبود شهید نمی‌شود.
Dear brothers, without being a martyr, you would not become a martyr.
Today's a special story, the life and character of Shahid General Haj Qasem Soleimani. Dear listeners, As the whole world knows by now, one of the greatest soldiers of Islam, one of the most courageous and bravest commanders of Islam, the one who was loved by all true Muslims, the legendary Haj Qasem Soleimani, the nightmare of all terrorist regimes and forces, was martyred by the terrorist Zionist regime of America and its allies. However, Allah has said in the Quran that martyrs are alive and that we should not say that they are dead. They are alive, but we cannot sense their life and existence. Haj Qasem and his comrades, as well as all martyrs from the beginning of history, will continue to exert their influence in this world, even though we may not be aware of it. With his martyrdom, the whole Muslim nation became more united. Just like our magnanimous Imam, Imam Khomeini, had said to the Western Zionists and their puppets, "Kill us, kill us, our nation will become more vigilant and awake." The enemies of Islam should not think that by martyring this great commander, they have achieved victory. No, the forces of Islam will take such a revenge on them that will go down in history and hasten their downfall. This is Ayatollah Khamenei's statements when awarding Major General Soleimani with Order of Zulfiqar.
Allah the Exalted says, Allah has purchased of the believers their lives and their possessions. For theirs in return is the heavens, paradise. They fight in his cause and slay and are slain. The Holy Quran, chapter 9, verse 111. What is offered to you in return for jihad in the way of Allah, and what Allah the Exalted grants in return for laying down your life and offering your possessions, is paradise and divine satisfaction. Allah the Exalted has thankfully blessed our very dear brother, Mr. Soleimani. He has time and time again exposed his life to the invasion of the enemy, and he has done so in the way of Allah, for Allah, and purely for the sake of Allah. And he has made a great endeavor. I hope that Allah the Exalted will reward and bless him, that he will help him live a blissful life, and that he will make his end marked by martyrdom.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is the teacher you're listening to. The martyrdom of the great legend, Shahid General Haj Qasem Soleimani, was met with strong reactions by all major Muslim figures of the resistance movement. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah condemned such a terrorist act at the hands of the U.S. Nevertheless, martyrdom in Islam is something to be proud of, and the one who is martyred must be congratulated for achieving such an honor. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said a very good thing to the U.S. He said that just the shoe of Haj Qasem Soleimani is worth